Joining me in studio now for a closer look at the equity space is Rowan Williams from Nitrogen Fund Managers. Thanks so much, Rowan, for joining us today. So that in a nutshell, the trading day that was, and how much on the edge of your seat are you sitting at this stage? Because with each day, we expect some big announcement to be made with regards to the future of President Jacob Zuma. And that just seems to be being put off as the days go by.
Yeah, but it does appear to be drawing to a final conclusion. I think it's a process that essentially started with Cyril Ramaphosa's victory at the elective conference in December, and sort of culminating in what hopefully will be a decisive day tomorrow, in that either our president resigns this evening or the motion of no confidence passes tomorrow. So I think it's been leading to this inevitability, and sort of retrospect we'll look at this was sort of news and information along the way. But what we have seen is the financial markets running sort of ahead of the event to some extent. We've seen the rand steadily strengthening to 2.5-year highs against the dollar. We have seen our financial and local more interest rate sensitive stocks running up significantly again today. The retailers were very strong. Those retail figures out for December indicate still a healthy consumer environment. So I think what we're seeing is mainly foreign investors and local investors betting on a better future for South Africa.
Let's hone in on something like the retail space within this context, because as you highlighted, the stronger rand lending it some favor, but those retail sales numbers for December coming in at 5.3% year on year, or an increase of 5.3% year on year coming through, certainly boding well for the sector as a whole. If we have things play out the way we hope they will down the line, how much more legs do we see, or how much more momentum do the retail stocks gain in this kind of context? Because, of course, what it speaks to is a boost to consumer confidence levels as a whole.
Absolutely. And I think we have seen in fairly difficult environment, and what appeared to be sort of an environment which the consumer was under pressure, actually fairly resilient retail sales. And I guess investors are saying if we have actually a buoyant economy and a consumer that is more positive, then we may see improved sales. The numbers have been good, also the profit numbers have been good in terms of cost control. The stronger rand should improve some of the input costs and the gross margins, so possibly improve profitability on higher turnover from here, that earnings could accelerate. And I guess that's what the market's betting on. It does look a fair amount of that is priced in, because they have re-rated significantly already. So I think you need to pick and choose and see what is still offering value across the sector.
What's interesting is that within the industrial component, yes, we had retail sales climb on the back of that stronger rand, which outweighed some of the pressure that was exerted on the rand hedges, barring the likes of a Bidcorp, top performer on the top 40 index today, up 5.5% by the close. Naspers trading 1.9% to the good as well. What have you made of the kind of action we've seen on those counters?
Yeah, a little bit curious, I guess, because you would expect them to soften with a stronger rand. Naspers has been under significant pressure. I think it had 11 down days in a row, which was somewhat of a record. We have seen Tencent, which was under pressure given the fears about US rate hikes and accelerated rate hikes, under quite a lot of pressure, and Naspers following suit. We're seeing a little bit of a reversal of that. I think it's bottomed out. The numbers today from the US were quite interesting, sort of retail sales, the slow retail sales tempered the concerns of the higher CPI numbers, and we actually saw the market turn around. So Naspers looks like, I guess, it could follow higher, 10 cent higher essentially from these levels. Bidcorp sort of, I guess, it caught a bid and there was a buyer there, nothing else to explain it.
Yeah, well, of course, Bidcorp out with its results next week as well, so we anticipate that. Let's take a look at a company with out with numbers today, Gold Fields. The market's not liking those numbers. That share price down close enough to 4% by the finish, and that, as it showed, a fall in its earnings over the full year period. What's your view on Gold Fields right now?
Yeah, I think what we saw is disappointing numbers on the production side, and some of the bigger projects. South Deep continues to disappoint. They've sort of pushed out the date by which it'll get to full production capacity a little bit further. Some of those mega projects also weighing in terms of CapEx. So I think just a miss in terms of expectations, and hence the market selling off the share.
Yeah. Looking at cash flows, though, because I was speaking to Nick Holland a little earlier, and he said while you've got South Deep sitting in a position of distress right now, it's looking to pay off. They've set a new target. 2020 seems to be that new date that's in mind. But international operations still providing nice cushion, to the extent that it's provided, what, $450 million worth of cash flow. So to what extent do you look at those international operations positively, and does that start to offset any of those concerns on the South Deep front?
Yes, I think what you've seen is all the gold majors really diversify away from South Africa. It's considered just too risky a mining jurisdiction, and so a lot of them are offshore based, and I guess real dollar earnings now, so a weak rand, I guess, can also weigh on them to some extent. But it does reduce the risk and counter the concerns there. But I guess that's all understood in terms of the investment case. South Deep just continues to disappoint, and I guess that's one of the issues.
Are you amongst those wondering why they just don't cut their losses with South Deep?
Yeah, it does seem they've made a huge commitment there, I guess, massive capex. If they can get it right, it is a significant ore body. It can produce for a number of years. So it's, I guess, one of their sort of signature projects, and they want to see it through.
Yeah. What's your stock pick at the moment, Robert?
We like RMH at the moment. It's obviously exposed to First Rand, but it's a much cheaper entry point. The discount has widened quite a bit. And so if you're still looking for value in what we expect to be a continued buoyant domestic industrial and banking sector, that one looks reasonable value right now.
Let's leave it there, Rowan. Thanks so much for joining us in studio this evening. Of course, Rowan Williams is with Nitrogen Fund Managers. Emira Property Fund managed to return to positive distribution growth for the 6 months ended December, with its portfolio registering growth of 7.9%, tighter cost controls, capital efficiency and lower vacancies coming in support of that. To help unpack the numbers, now I'm joined in studio by Jeff Jennett, who's CEO of Emira Property Fund. Thanks so much, Jeff, for your time today. So earnings today in line with guidance, yes, but how soon before you see the company actually hitting your target of inflation beating growth in distribution?
Thanks, Alicia. We're pretty confident that the 2.5% that we delivered for the first 6 months of FY18 will continue for the remainder, for the balance of our financial year to June 2018. And then we should be moving into positive real growth in distributions for 2019 as a minimum. I think the rebalancing that we've been doing over the last 2 years have certainly paid off. You've seen in terms of our disposals that we've been doing, the rebalancing that we've been doing on that side. You've seen our new initiative into the US. You've seen our initiative into residential. All of those should start coming through. So I'm pretty confident that come 2019 financial year, June 2019, we should see a return to a minimum of real growth and distribution.
Okay, so you've touched on some of the shifts that you've started to trigger here, but let's drill down into the detail of what's helping you build this momentum and how we've seen some of your operating metrics change over the period.
So the first one is on the vacancy side. We've managed to reduce our vacancies from this time last year, which was 7% of the whole portfolio, down to 4.5%. If you segmentalize that in the office portfolio, we were 16%, we're now down to 9%. So that's some of the metrics that we've been working actively on in terms of our tenant incentivization program, as well as all the hard work from our asset managers to get the portfolio in perfect condition.
You talk about tenant incentivization, yes, and getting to leverage of what sits within your portfolio, but you've also been cutting your exposure to that office space in order to, I guess, get rid of the dead weight that sits within your portfolio. Yeah.
Yes, and that's where our disposal program has been so effective. We've disposed of 6 assets in the last 6 months. Add that to the 11 assets that we disposed of in the past 12 months, that's 17 assets which we've disposed of, and also very importantly, at a slight premium to book value, which tells you that your values that you're disposing of are the right values. Also very importantly, you mentioned our core like-for-like growth. Because of our letting that we've been doing, we're starting to see that come through, and we're sitting on 7.9% like-for-like growth in our core portfolio. So to me, it's all the steps that we've been taking. I wouldn't say it's any one of them. Mm-hmm. I'd say it's all of them, and that's why we're confident that together with the other initiatives should enable us to drive into that real growth in distributions.
I want to stick to your exposure within the South African market specifically. I mean, we talk about you letting go of your office exposure, but you're bulking up on the residential space quite aggressively. So talk us through what's happening there and how that's all starting to pay off for you.
So in August, we started our first residential conversion. We took 10,000 square meters of B-grade office space in the Rosebank area, and we are busy in the process of converting that into residential. Residential units focused on LSM 7 and 8, which we believe in the market is the wide area of the market. Here you're letting 30 to 40 square meter units, single units, for in the region of between 6 and 9,000 rand a month. So it's focused more on the affordable side. We're not looking to sell those units, we're looking to own them and let them out. We've teamed up with the Fenster Group to where they've taken a 25% co-ownership in the first building, and we would look to continue to roll that one out. And what's very important there is that that also talks to our rebalancing, because and at the same time we're reducing the offices and we're looking at the alternative use, and certainly bringing in residential close to where people work is certainly very attractive.
Of course, you've got to be watching local developments on the political front very, very keenly at this stage of the game. Where are your confidence levels sitting right now, Jeff?
So I would think that EMEA's confidence levels as well as South Africa's confidence levels are very high. Following the positive results out of the ANC elective conference. So from a sentiment side, that's very, very, very positive. Mm-hmm. But we need that to now translate into the real economy. And that we need to see some decisive leadership taking place and important steps that are taking place in at the budget level, so that the plans that South Africans have, that we've been had on ice for the last 12 months, the last 18 months, we're then willing to actually then to commit to that. And when that starts, you're then going to see South Africa really starting to work again to deliver growth rates in excess of this 1 to 2% that we're on at the moment.
That is going to take time, though. And while that does, you've been, of course, building up your offshore investments. So you've increased your international exposure now to 7% of your balance sheet during the year or during the half year. What's your target sitting at this stage when it comes to international exposure versus local?
We anticipate by June 2018, we should be sitting at a 10% offshore exposure, where we've been added on 4% in this financial year from the 6% up to the 10% level. I'd anticipate going further than that to add on a further 4% in the next financial year. Mm-hmm. So hopefully by June 2019, we should be sitting at 14 to 15% of our total portfolio sitting in the offshore side.
And doing that primarily via partnerships on the international front, right?
Definitely. That is our methodology, the co-investment methodology into the United States, dealing with partners that have got skin in the game, that co-invest with you and have that knowledge on the ground.
Well, let's leave it there. Jeff, thanks so much for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, Jeff Jennett is CEO at Emira Property Fund. Well, with that, we're going to shift focus to the retail sector now in the international arena. Sweden's clothing retail company H&M held an investor briefing today to assuage concerns over future strategy. It's betting on rising online sales to drive earnings this year by offsetting weaknesses in its physical stores. Here's that report.
If putting investors' minds at ease was H&M's plan, its first ever investor briefing on its outlook appears to have worked. The Swedish firm expects earnings to grow this year as rising online sales offset weakness in its physical stores. Shares in the world's second biggest fashion retailer were up 2.5% on the news. The rival to Zara owner Inditex expects growth of at least 25% in online sales, with a goal to reach $9.4 billion by 2022.
Those figures are showing some tangible change, not just in shop sales, but particularly online. Now, of course, this is a common theme throughout the whole retail sector, but particularly for them when they're up against Zara, their major rival, can they actually show themselves not only to be fast on their feet, but also being efficient in terms of their sales and getting their sales up online to make sure that profit margin is being protected.
But sales from its existing stores are expected to continue falling. Inditex has consistently outperformed its Swedish rival, helped by having a faster supply chain. Shares in H&M have slipped for three straight years, shedding more than half their value from a record high in 2015. Earlier this week, the retailer dropped plans to ask shareholders to reinvest their dividend payout in new H&M shares. But the proposal played a part in sending the battered stock down to its lowest level since 2008, when it was announced last month.
Welcome back. Well, U.S. inflation numbers came in higher than expected, spooking markets once again. Let's cross to Bronwyn now, who's standing by with more detail on that story and the latest on other international news from the Deutsche Welle team in Frankfurt. Bronwyn.
Thanks, Alicia. Well, we've all been anticipating those U.S. inflation numbers, and they have come in above expectations at 2.1% year-on-year in January. This likely to prompt the Federal Reserve to raise rates at a faster pace. Anticipation of this exact situation is what put global markets on edge last week. So for a look at how the news is being digested, let's cross now to the Frankfurt Stock Exchange, where Ulrich Barths from Deutsche Welle is standing by. Ulrich, thanks so much for your time today. So does today's print from the U.S. mean that we're likely to see continued market volatility?
When the inflation data from the United States came through, it came through as a mild shock. The market here in Germany lost speed immediately. The DAX turned south and immediately lost more than 100 points and then recovered some. But talking to traders, they don't really know what to make of it. Yes, the inflation is higher, but is this the kind of shock with the kind of tumbles ensuing that people were fearing? A trader I talked to said he can't imagine with this kind of number, the Fed actually going away from raising interest rates three times this year to four times, which would then be a game changer for the market. So some of the people here are reacting. Yes, they are reacting, but in a moderate way.
We've also had data points released for Germany, GDP and inflation figures, growth slowing slightly in the fourth quarter while inflation confirmed at a three-month low of 1.6%. How pleased are investors with the numbers?
I think investors are pleased with the numbers. The economic growth in Germany is motoring along. Yes, it is a bit less than the previous quarter, but the projections for 2018 are that German growth picks up even more. And when you see the case for industrial production, when you see the kind of trade balance one has with the record exports and imports for 2017, it's a very strong base on which to continue from. Of course, the people see the risks. We just talked about inflation and interest rates. That's also a major risk for the people in Germany here, as would be a strong euro. If there was anything that would happen to the dollar, that would also be a game changer here, perhaps.
And checking in on some company news now, ThyssenKrupp out with first quarter results showing that profit was boosted by surging steel prices, which is making some question the rationale behind the company's decision to merge its steel activities with those of Tata in Europe.
It seems a strange time to sell a profit-making unit now. Just now, as steel is getting back and really being a profit engine for ThyssenKrupp. It's the second biggest profit engine in the group for this quarter. But Heinrich Hiesinger, the CEO of ThyssenKrupp, insists that in the long term, it's the right decision. Because over the long term, considering steel is a very cyclical business, there will come worse times economically, and then steel will be worse hit than other units that the company has. That's his opinion. Plus, he says, by putting the steel unit into a merger with Tata Steel Europe, he's contributing to reducing overcapacity in the sector, and that also helps steel prices and helps steel along the way.
Ulrich, let's leave it there for today as we've run out of time. Ulrich Barths is from Deutsche Welle, and that's a wrap of your global markets news. Alicia, it's back to you.
Well, that's all the time we have for this hour. After the break, it's you and your money. I'm back at 7 o'clock with the news, and we also catch up with Goldfield CEO Nick Holland after the company reported a loss for its full year, as well as unpacking retail sales data out today. So don't go away. What's your stock pick at the moment, Rowan?
We like RMH at the moment. It's obviously exposed to First Rand, but it's a much cheaper entry point. The discount has widened quite a bit. And so if you're still looking for value in what we expect to be a continued buoyant domestic industrial and banking sector, that one looks reasonable value right now.
Let's leave it there, Rowan. Thanks so much for joining us in studio this evening. Of course, Rowan Williams is with Nitrogen Fund Managers.